Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast is joining you. We know you're panicking, and we're here to either panic with you or maybe calm your nerves a little bit. On the other line is Matt Velasquez, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, and for the first time all season, we have back-to-back losses to discuss. The Bucks closed down a West Coast road trip with setbacks against the Utah Jazz and the lowly Phoenix Suns. Last place team in the West is the first team to beat the Bucks twice this season. That's kind of blowing everybody's mind, and there's a little unsettledness in Bucks Nation. Matt Velasquez, my understanding is here. You're here to talk some sense into fools. Is that what you're here for?
I mean, I don't think fools was the word I used, but I mean, we can go with it if we want.
Well, we don't want to insult our podcast listeners. They're not fools. They're extremely learned. They're here for your counsel.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things where, I mean, this stuff happens. It's the NBA. Eric Bledsoe was like, hey, we're not going to win every game. Like, no one wins every game. Like, this, that's just how it goes. Like, you know, if the Bucks had lost to the Kings but beaten the Suns, would you feel that much better? Like, I don't know.
Ooh, that's a good question. I would actually feel better.
Actually, I think, did I switch that wrong around the wrong way? If they had lost to the Kings, beat the Suns, I think I said the right way. Okay. But yeah. Would you feel better? It's like, oh, so they lost to a better team, but then beat a worse team. Like, instead, they beat a better team and lost to the worst team, where you're like, eh, like, they really just didn't get up for them. Like, they just didn't.
And in fact, we played great against the Kings as they blew a late lead, but they played really well without Giannis seeing a lot of floor time to win that game in overtime, as it turns out. I am going to give you the floor and just give you more time to just really talk this through as why we shouldn't be concerned. I think most intelligent Bucks fans know that two losses in a row is destined to happen at some point, and West Coast road trip is as good a place as any for those losses to happen, even if it features the Phoenix Suns. But first, let's indulge a little bit into possible concerns that might be indicated by recent play, not necessarily even these last two games. Defensively, we've seen the Bucks allow a ton of 100-point games in a row. Now, that's six straight games of allowing at least 105 points. One of those games was an overtime game against the Kings, so you have to kind of factor that in as well. But the defense, which was so sharp and the number one defense in the NBA all season long, has at least shown some vulnerability. Now, I don't know if that's just because they're playing teams with a higher pace of play and more possessions, or however the metrics will look at it, but it does seem like the Bucks defensively are I don't know, fatigued, a little bit different than they were before. How would you describe that or look at that?
You know, I think that they're just generally not playing defense with the with the intensity, with the consistency that they have in the past. I think part of that is, you know, just general, it's the kind of the natural progression of things, that they are not cruising, but, you know, they're on their way toward, they're in the backstretch of the season, you know? But at the same time, they're also getting used to different lineups. They've had injuries, they've had guys out. I think George Hill, being out and having Pat Connaughton be that guy who is replacing him, they're very different defensive players. I think George Hill's very solid, knows where he needs to be, is effective without being over-aggressive, whereas Connaughton, you know, the slightest up fake, and he is soaring to try and go for a block, and you see him a lot in games just flying by people and leaving them open shots. And so that's definitely not all of it. I'm not putting all the defensive issues on Pat Connaughton. That's just unreasonable. But it just kind of is one of the many things that is happening right now, where they don't have their normal rotations, they don't have their normal guys, and they're also just not playing that consistency. During that trip, they had three games in particular, the Kings game, the Jazz game, and the Suns game, where the fourth quarters they fell apart. And maybe, you know, with the Kings, that was partly, because Giannis didn't play as much, or they thought, okay, we're up by 14 with 6 minutes to go, like, we're good. And the Kings just kind of, like, went crazy and gave them that really big last punch. Maybe the Jazz game was, hey, we're on a back-to-back, we're missing two of our starters, this wouldn't normally happen. And the Suns are like, oh, hey, this is the Suns, like, whatever. You know, but the Suns really came out and played hard. I mean, that was their Super Bowl, essentially. And they've been playing pretty well recently. And they want to win as much as, you know, people might be looking into tanking and all that stuff. Like, that team, like, wants to win. The players want to win. And they're definitely playing with an enthusiasm and interest. So Milwaukee's defense just hasn't been great. I mean, Bud was even lamenting it after their win over the Timberwolves, where they won 140 to 128. He's like, well, I guess you can't argue with, like, 140 points, but the defense wasn't good. And so they definitely need to pick it up. I mean, their defensive rating over the past six games is 114. It's like 114.6 or something like that, which is, like, terabad. Like, that is, like, really just beyond, like, anything close to what they've normally been doing. They still have the best defense in the NBA with 104 defensive rating. And 114 would actually be, like, equivalent to, like, 29th in the league over the course of the season. So, like, they can't just lean on their offense being, like, absolutely elite every game in order to bail them out. They need to actually, you know, play some defense, get back to what they've been doing most of the time on the defensive end, because that's where they're going to need to be come playoff time.
Yeah, you touched on a couple things there that I do want to talk about. The environment inside these venues, I'm going to come back to that, because it isn't just Phoenix. I mean, Utah, the place seemed just completely up for grabs, and that's because the Bucks are they are the talk of the NBA, or at least they're approaching that standard. So it's nice to see teams really bring their best shot. But what you mentioned is true for three straight games now, including the Kings game. They had big leads in the fourth quarter, and with the Suns, it wasn't as substantial. But with the Jazz, I mean. With the Jazz and the Kings, like, they were a big 17-point lead against the Jazz. Of course, they didn't have their guards. Eric Bledsoe was out. Malcolm Brogdon was out. They had an unusual lineup to start that game. I mean, they had some disadvantages. That was a back-to-back. But when you lose that big of a lead in the fourth quarter, and with the Suns, I would argue, an 8-9-point lead in the fourth quarter against the worst team in the West, you should be able to pull that through. So is it just what you're talking about? Their defense is just not able to sustain throughout the fourth quarter, that this has happened to them? But it's just so unusual to see a Bucks team unable to close an opponent out, and it was certainly true in the Kings win and the Jazz loss. What would you attribute that to? Is there anything you'd attribute that to other than what you were just talking about with the defense?
You know, I think with the Jazz game in particular, I think whenever they went to their bench, you know, Bud was trying to find all these different lineups. He went with the, you know, I think what is now being called the Mega Bucks lineup, which, you know, it's fun because Mega Bucks is the sponsor of their starting lineup, and when they go with these 6'8" or taller guys, you know, Mega Bucks, it just works on a lot of levels.
But true or false, you coined the Mega Bucks term, and now you're pushing it. Is that what's happening here?
No, false. It wasn't me. I'm pretty sure it was Malika Andrews from ESPN. We were sitting a couple seats apart in Utah, coming up with different ideas. So that was her, full credit. I think it's caught on with other people. I think it's, you know, something that if she didn't come up with it, it would have come up. It was there for the taking. So anyways, that lineup was, like, really awesome. Like, it just in the 8 minutes they played in Utah, they were, like, a plus 124 net rating, which is just a crazy, crazy number. You know, fun with small sample sizes, all that kind of stuff. But outside of that, whenever Bud went to the bench and tried to mix things up, it wasn't working. So that was trying to find that good crunch time lineup in that game. It was difficult. The Jazz scored on 13 straight possessions, which part of that is, you know, just unlucky. You know, they were getting good shots, and the fact that they made all of them. And some of those, I think at least two of those possessions they missed, but got their own rebound. And so, defensive rebounding was an issue, something that Bud was also pretty unhappy with in the Phoenix game. So I think that was an issue, guys being out of position to get rebounds and figure out that part of the game. And I think, you know, it's just sometimes teams are going to come at you hard. Like when you're up by 17, you're up by 14, you're up by 10, you know, in that fourth quarter, they're just going to sell out, and they're going to bring that, like, level of intensity and energy, and they're just going to ratchet it up, especially on the defensive end for them. And so the Bucks need to figure out, like, who is going to be that person, or what is going to be the set that they're going to use to break that down. And it just, you know, we saw it in the Lakers game, right? It was Eric Bledsoe. It was, let's put the ball in Bledsoe's hands and let's let him go to work. And either he can score at the rim if they don't double, or he can kick out to other people. You know, he did that against the Lakers. He did that against the Kings. And, you know, and they made some things out of it and were able to score and win both of those games. At times this season, it's been Giannis doing stuff like that. Of course, teams really key on him. You know, but I think it's really important that they get contributions from a bunch of different people, because during that trip, at least in the four West Coast games that were close that had crunch time minutes, like, you know, Brook Lopez really didn't do much. Like, Chris Middleton really didn't do much. Like, Nikola Mirotic, like, if he was out there, didn't really do much. Ersan scored, like, one basket. It was Giannis, Bledsoe, and Brogdon. Those are the only guys who scored, like, multiple baskets in crunch time, like, and could be consistently relied upon to, like, make shots. And so, you know, I think Chris Middleton, you know, missing his shots in crunch time. I think he played the most crunch time minutes. I think he played 19 of all of those guys. And he scored from the free throw line, but he wasn't able to get any shots down. And so that was an issue. You know, I think, well, I guess he did make that three against the Jazz. They were down by six with like less than a minute left. So, like, but he wasn't consistently contributing, in terms of crunch time offerings. And this season, that's kind of been an issue, for Middleton, where he's made big shots, but I think over the course of the whole season, he's shooting like 33%, in the last 5 minutes of games where the, you know, between when the score's within 5 points. So that's not great. Obviously, he doesn't create offense in the same way that a Bledsoe or a Brogdon or a Giannis does. He's more of a, you know, kind of a shooter, someone who needs to be created for. And like, there have been games where he has created, just hasn't scored, right? Like, there was that game against the Raptors where two plays in a row, he's the one who has the ball in his hands, who drives and kicks and, you know, finds Brogdon for a three. And then on the next possession, you know, they're swinging the ball around and he passes up a shot and pushes it over to Brogdon and he gets another open three. And so it's not like he's useless. He obviously can create. He does things that help the team. He draws his defender. He has to be respected. He's made big shots. He made that winning shot against the Bulls at Fiserv Forum. But, you know, he's going to need to be better than he was during this trip. He's in a little bit of a slump right now. And he's going to have to be better overall on this trip, especially in the fourth quarter, in order to give the Bucks as many options as possible to pull games out.
Here's the last thought before we sort of swing the conversation around and talk about why the Bucks are still in great shape. The schedule is tough, and it was certainly tough on this West Coast road trip where they were, you know, they were jamming in three games in a 5 day window there. It was a 4 day window there. Very, very tough finish, and they'll come back to Fiserv Forum on Thursday night and face an Indiana Pacers team that is 100% in the conversation for a top four spot in the East, and a team that the Bucks have to take very seriously. You know, it gets tough here down the stretch. A lot of games packed in together and some tough opponents, and you know that, and you saw it in the Kings game, that even against good teams, Mike Budenholzer is going to find ways to limit the amount of time Giannis has to see the floor. And in fact, that game, I think there'd be a lot of emphasis on how he used Giannis if the Bucks had lost that game, the way that they basically went out and won that game with almost not nothing from Giannis on the floor. So that was sort of an interesting snapshot. We saw him play in full the next two games, but you know, he's going to be out here and there. And certainly you could probably say the same for their other star players, Bledsoe, Middleton. Does the schedule concern you at all? And maybe a connected question to that is, how important is that one seed to the Bucks? Because you would think that they'd have to go full bore to hold off the Raptors and claim that top spot. Maybe that's just not a goal that the Bucks truly care about. They got a playoff spot. They're going to be a top two seed almost certainly. How much emphasis are they going to put on that? And how does that relate to how they end up resting guys these last 19 games?
I mean, they want the one seed. I don't think there's any question that they want it, but they're also not going to put themselves in jeopardy. They're not going to play guys a ton more minutes than they need to in order to do that. I think, you know, as close as the race is, they are 2.5 games up on the Raptors. They have 18 games to go. I mean, they would have to basically finish like around 500, and the Raptors would have to, like, you know, be like 13-4 or something like that to overtake them, which,
jeez, when you put it that way, holy smokes.
Yeah, I mean, it's not super likely that that'll happen. I mean, the Bucks, you know, don't have, it's not like just a whole bunch of gimmies on their schedule for the rest of the season, but they do have plenty of winnable games. I mean, they have Cleveland twice. You know, they have Atlanta twice. They have Atlanta twice. You know, they have, you know, a bunch of tough games in there too. I mean, they also have the 76ers twice. And they go on a trip to San Antonio, New Orleans, and Miami. That could definitely be a tough situation. You know, they have the Rockets and the Clippers at home. They have to go to Brooklyn. And they play Brooklyn at home too. So like those two games against Brooklyn, you know, Brooklyn's going to be fighting for their playoff seeding and maybe their playoff lives come that point in the season. You know, they've been sliding a little bit. So, I mean, it's not like they have a bunch of gimmies, but, they, you know, this Bucks team has also not been a team that has strung together losing streaks, right? Like, we've reached the 64-game mark of the season, and they've lost two in a row once. And they've been playing, you know, they've won three-quarter of their games. I mean, so, it's, you know, this is, it would be a very large fall-off, even if they're resting guys, even if they were trying to manage their loads and manage their minutes for the rest of the season. And they've generally been doing that like on a game-by-game basis. I mean, guys are averaging significantly fewer minutes than they did last season, at least when you talk about Giannis and Middleton, Brogdon, Bledsoe. Those guys are around similar amounts, you know, as they were last year. But with Giannis and Middleton, they've come down significantly, and everyone's kind of around the 30-minute mark in terms of minutes per game. And Bud's been doing that, you know, all year round, and he'll keep doing that as much as possible. You know, so I think that this is it's hard for me to see a path toward the Bucks losing the number one seed. You know, obviously it's certainly still possible. The Raptors could really get on a tear to end the season. You know, and the Bucks could, you know, be slightly behind what they've been doing. But having a 2.5-game lead right now with the tiebreaker in hand, it's definitely got them in the driver's seat for the rest of the season.
Raptors falling to the Houston Rockets on Tuesday as we record this. So that put the Raptors at two straight losses as well. I wonder if they're panicking in Toronto. The magic number down to 15 as we record this on Wednesday morning. You should check out my magic number update every day at jsonline.com. Get you some insight into what's next on the schedule that matters in the Eastern Conference playoff chase, how it would, you know, shape up if the season ended today. I'm enjoying doing that so far. So again, jsonline.com, where you can follow along with that. Let's turn the tide a little bit and reassure people that the end of the world is not near. And I want to start going back to the venues that these games have been in. And certainly it's hard to understand through television what the environment is like, but it seemed in Sacramento, Utah, Phoenix, all those places, people were turning out to see the Bucks, and they were fired up, especially Utah. It seemed like Phoenix, there was a fair amount of Wisconsin fandom in there. You obviously had some Milwaukee Brewers in attendance. Christian Yelich sitting courtside, MVP. I'm curious what the experience has been like. I mean, this has got to be similar to what the Warriors went through when they were, I mean, the Warriors now, but certainly especially when they were 24-0 coming into Milwaukee, that sort of vibe where everybody's excited to see the big dog and comes out cheering their team more heartily than they would otherwise. Has that been your experience?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's quite at Warriors levels or like LeBron levels. But it's, you know, it's definitely up there. You know, people are excited to see the Bucks. There are a lot of Bucks fans, a lot of people in Giannis jerseys, a lot of Greek folks coming out to games. You know, they're very noticeable, very loud. But I mean, I didn't see as many Bucks fans. There are definitely some Bucks fans, but especially Utah was rocking. That was like the loudest non-playoff atmosphere I think I've ever been in for a regular season NBA game. I mean, those people were rocking, you know, from the beginning of the game. Obviously, the Jazz got off to a slow start. Bucks started 20-6, but that crowd, like every call, every bucket, like they were exploding. I mean, I couldn't even talk to people who were like one seat over from me. Like it was hard to hear, and it was definitely really fun to be in that type of environment. Sacramento was also, you know, those fans were buzzing. They have a nice, fun, young team that it seems like they're rallying behind, and they kind of got into that game. And Phoenix, like I said, this was their Super Bowl. Like, this was the game that, like, you know, you're playing the best team in the NBA, and like your season hasn't gone well. And you know, but you have these young guys that you want to get excited about, and there were a lot of Bucks fans there. You know, definitely a significant crowd. very loud when the Bucks were rolling there for a little bit. But the Phoenix people, they made sure they were heard when the Suns made their comeback, and Kelly Oubre was doing Kelly Oubre things, and you know they loved DeAndre Ayton scoring over Giannis kind of to not totally seal the game, but pretty much seal the game. I've really enjoyed, and we didn't even mention Staples Center. I mean, Staples Center on national TV, LeBron, Giannis, just all the excitement that comes with those players and those teams getting together. It was a really enjoyable trip, I thought, at least for me, to kind of be in those venues and kind of feel the electricity, because all of those places were full and kind of had that back and forth, not quite like a college back and forth. We have like closer to 50-50. It's nothing close to that, but there's definitely the back and forth. And the Bucks, credit to Bucks fans for having a road presence, because that hasn't always been the case.
Bucks had a long stretch where it seemed like they were playing every other game at Pfizer Forum, and that has certainly the tables have turned, because we've seen a lot of road games slightly before the All-Star break. Since then, they'll be heading back out of the road after they play two home games. Mentioned the Indiana game Thursday, Saturday against Charlotte, and then out on the road, like you said, San Antonio, New Orleans, Miami before coming back. They kind of do close. I would argue their home stretch schedule is nice. Four home games, three roadies, and then three more at home. The road games in the middle there include Atlanta. So that's kind of a comfortable closing to the year. Let's do though what I promised off the top. Just give you the floor. Couple reasons why, I'll give you a couple directions you can go, and just in general why these two losses cannot possibly be considered an omen of bad things to come. Particularly, I would also look at Chris Middleton. I feel like people get down on him very quickly. That's just my observation, and I don't know if that's something you experience as well. But when Chris Middleton struggles for a couple games in a row, I feel like there is a very vocal contingent of fans who get down on him, who get down on an all-star player who's been very good for the Bucks this season. I don't know if you've observed that, but be interested to hear you chat about Middleton specifically, but the Bucks in general, and what two losses in a row really does mean in the grand scheme of things.
It means basically nothing. I think it's just one of those situations where, I mean, we went into the game against the Jazz and people were like, oh, it's just a schedule loss, like write it off, it's over, like, and that was before Bledsoe was announced as being out. And then suddenly, the locker room closes and we're getting ready for the game. And it's like, oh, yeah, Bledsoe's not going to play either. It's like, oh, well, definitely a schedule loss. Don't even play Giannis. It's useless. Like, just save everybody. This is dumb. And then, credit to the Bucks. Like, they gave people a reason to believe they could win that game. I mean, they were playing on a back-to-back, lost an hour traveling, playing at altitude, which is kind of a low-key thing with Utah. Everybody thinks about Denver as being at altitude, but Salt Lake City's at altitude too. And they made that game very competitive to the point where they really could have and should have won it. And it took Donovan Mitchell, going bananas, and a major comeback by the Jazz to make that happen. And you gotta kind of tip the cap. Like I said before, the Suns game, just was a case of one team getting up for it and the other team not really getting up for it. And shots not falling. The Bucks had a really low 3-point shooting percentage and they were 12 of 42. Guys like Mirotić and Lopez weren't hitting from 3-point range. Middleton missed 12 straight shots after making his first shot of the game. It's just, the confluence of bad things happened, and it's okay. I think if the Bucks fall to the Pacers, if they continue to play poor defense and continue struggling, like, okay, now we have a lot more to talk about. This is more of an issue. We need to see what we have to dig down a little bit deeper. I'm also interested to see, we'll find out. By the time you've listened to this, we'll probably have found out. But, Giannis Antetokounmpo, he hit his hand during the Suns game. He played the rest of the game. It seemed to be bothering him a little bit. But, he downplayed it after the game, saying, I just got hit. He's fine. Then he was asked about, hey, you went to the trainer's room. He left the locker room, before media even went in. He left, went to the trainer's room, came back, wasn't accompanied by any of the Bucks trainers at that time. But, he was checked And he said, oh, I just knew somebody over there, just saying hi. You know, but then he still got his hand wrapped up after that. So, you know, I don't know the full extent of it now. I'm guessing by the time that you listen to this podcast, we'll have had a chance to ask about it at practice. So the extent of that and what that situation entails, you know, could be more cause for concern. But, you know, for right now, with the expectation that they're getting healthier, that players like George Hill is getting closer. There was no chance he was going to play on the road trip, as I've put out there. I talked to Sterling Brown in Phoenix, and he's like, oh, yeah, you know, my wrist is feeling better. I don't really have a timetable, but I'm getting better. You know, Dante DiVincenzo is starting to ramp up maybe this week. So they're going to be getting healthier in general and kind of building towards the playoffs. I think when you talk about Chris Middleton, yes, like it's very apparent people are more than willing to turn on him at a moment's notice. I think it all comes down to his contract situation where they don't believe he deserves a max or the Bucks shouldn't pay him the max. And we'll go over that a lot more in the future. But basically, if he wants a max, he will get a max. It doesn't have to be from the Bucks, or if it's not from the Bucks, someone else will give him that, because it's just a function of, you know, who has money and who the free agents are. And if teams still have money and the free agents, the top level free agents are gone, they still have money to give. And so they're just going to give that money. It's just going to happen. Like, teams aren't going to just say, oh, well, I won't give the max, or I won't give near the max, you know, because of, you know, because I can't get anybody good. It's like, well, he's the best guy now. So in order to get that best guy in the marketplace where other teams also will have money to throw at people, you're going to have to compete and you're going to have to pay it. And for the Bucks, you know, you get down into the weeds of bird rights and things like that. But if they don't pay Middleton, like, they don't necessarily get that money back. You can't go over the cap to sign players. So unless you own their bird rights, they have his bird rights and they'd be able to sign him and go over the cap. If you're going to sign, and if you're over the cap and want to sign somebody else, you can only give them limited contracts. You can only give them the mid-level exception. They already used their biannual exception this past year on Brook Lopez, or you can give them a minimum contract. So you're going to lose him and not be able to replace him with someone of equal quality. And so it doesn't make sense to let him walk when you can pay him, have him under contract. And if, you know, that's not necessarily going to be an unwieldy or terrible contract that you can't move on from. I mean, we've seen that with other teams that have had, you know, even worse contracts that have moved off of them. And he's still a high quality player. You don't just get like a 6'8" guy who can score, you know, shoot threes, be a contributor from the mid range, you know, put up the assist numbers and the rebound numbers that he does, and be able to play, you know, the versatile defense that he does. You're just not going to find that just lying around anywhere. So I mean, that's kind of the long and short of Chris Middleton. People don't want to pay the max, but that's probably the most likely scenario and the only way that you can keep him and keep this team together. He's also somebody who balled out in the playoffs last year. I don't think that was a fluke. I think it was a very strong stretch that I don't know how replicable it is, but it's not like, you know, you can't see him getting hot for a stretch of 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games, either in the regular season or the playoffs. He has that ability, just like he can slump sometimes. And so we've written a lot about him. He's an all-star. He's had to adjust a lot during the season under Budenholzer. You know, and right now he's struggling to get shots to fall. But in general, he's been really good. And he's definitely going to, you know, be an important piece if they're going to go far in the playoffs this year. So, that's a long way of saying I think things are fine. I don't think there's any reason to panic. I think the panic button should be like locked away in a vault, like a few miles away right now. It's not. There's no need to press that.
Matt Velasquez, you wrote at jsonline.com sort of a breakdown of just what you said, and I legitimately did not know that Golden State had lost 4 games at any point this year, not paying attention as much to the Western Conference, and that hit home for me. And obviously you can always find examples of teams that have done very well in many sports that just have a blind spot for whatever reason, that lose to a bad team more than they win. And two games against Phoenix is not even a really good representative sample size, but but it's just the type of thing that happens in sports all the time. And somebody else on Twitter said this. I think Bart Winkler from The Fan. We're not going to know. We will not remember this when the playoffs roll around. When the Bucks are playing the playoffs, we will not remember that they lost to the Phoenix Suns twice or lost back-to-back games that looks like they should have won against the Jazz and Suns. And he's absolutely right. It just feels like this is the moment we're in right now, so it's a bigger deal now. I also, sort of related to what you were talking about, you had mentioned the contract situation. I wanted to touch briefly on Eric Bledsoe signing his contract in Phoenix. I think I need to make a sound effect, the petty siren, or the pettiness siren, and I'll sound that when there's some NBA pettiness that we can talk about.
Petty. 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 Petty.
It is a gleeful topic of both yours and mine, and seeing the Bucks set up an opportunity for Bledsoe to sign this contract in Phoenix, the market he tweeted, supposedly not about the Phoenix Suns, but we know better, that he did not want to be there. He sat out a whole bunch of games while they waited to trade him. They finally did to the Bucks, and then to have him sign his contract there, I thought was definitely done with a wink and a nod. I don't know if you thought that was true or not, or if that was just timing. And then I was curious about some of the particulars there. Again, makes this contract sound very, very good for the Milwaukee Bucks. There's a lot to like here if you're interested in the Bucks' financial picture.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, in terms of signing it in Phoenix, I think it's just so fun. And I don't I don't know how intentional that was. Obviously, you know, news of the agreement came out on Friday. They were in LA. You know, how fast you could draft all the papers up and, you know, get everything ready and get everybody in the position to do that. You know, that they had a game Friday night. They had another game Saturday, so the next chance would probably be in Phoenix. But you know, they could have waited to get home in Milwaukee. They could have done some other stuff. I mean, I'm not saying expedite things, but they could have waited a little bit. But you know, you just want to you want to put pen to paper. You want to get it done. but
I wonder if Phoenix knew about that when they were playing them. I wonder if that crossed their minds at all, that they might be playing with a little extra enthusiasm that night.
Well, the first time Bledsoe touched the ball, he got roundly booed. So it didn't keep up for the rest of the game, but it was a thing. You know, but I think the contract itself, I think, is fair value. I think it's a decent value for the Bucks. At no point in his contract, you know, with it being 4 years, $70 million, at no point do they pay him more than $20 million in a season. It'll be starting at, you know, 15.625, you know, depending on how many digits you want to go out to, million. And I saw a tweet from Bobby Marks from ESPN saying that would put him at 13th among NBA point guards next season, not counting guys who don't have a contract yet, like Kyrie Irving and Kemba Walker. So he's basically going to be
lower half.
Well, at least average, like top 15 average point guard salary in the first year. Obviously, it's going to escalate. They have a, you know, you work in like max 8% raises the second year, the third year. So eventually it'll be $19,375,000. So 19.4, basically, if you just want to round up and call it that, in his fourth year. But that fourth year is only partially guaranteed for 3.9. So the Bucks are only currently on the hook for, if my math is correct, $54.5 million, where most of that would be in the first 3 years. And then if they decided to cut him or just move on from him before that last year, they'd owe him 3.9 in the last season, which would be dead cap money if they cut him. But that would be the full investment in Eric Bledsoe, which if you take that 54.5 divided by three, it's basically like $18 million, a little bit over $18 million a year, which is not bad for someone of his caliber who's going to be, you know, he's in his age 29 season now. So he's going to be playing most of that while he is in his early 30s. I think that's also a contract number where, you know, he could be moved. Like you could still trade him somewhere and be able to match salaries and find somebody. I think maybe, you know, even in that third year, if things aren't working right, you can say, hey, we want to trade him and whatever team gets him. But you know that he only has that partial guarantee, so you know it doesn't hurt as much in the second year. So it definitely gives them a lot of options, which is good. That's what you want if you're John Horst in the Bucks front office. You want flexibility. You want the opportunity to pay guys you know, fair or below market, and have them sign on for that. I think it's interesting that Bledsoe signed the contract when he did. You know, I think, you know, maybe his agent Rich Paul, you know, kind of was trying to get a feel for what his value would be over the summer. Maybe he just didn't think that the value would be there, that he'd be able to get more, and maybe there'd be a risk involved of either getting injured. You know, he has had an injury history in the past. You know, so maybe he gets injured, or, you know, maybe he has a playoffs like he did last year where, you know, that kind of hurt his, you know, his value coming into this season, where people were questioning, you know, how good he could be and how much he could help the Bucks. Obviously he's been really good, and I think he was deserving of being in the All-Star conversation. Maybe even could have been an All-Star. Maybe should have been an All-Star, this season. I think you could make a strong argument for that. The fact that he wasn't, maybe helped the Bucks sign him for what they did. And then, you know, with the uncertainty of maybe the injuries, maybe the playoffs, the rest of the season, it was just better for him to stay with the Bucks. And I know that he has said multiple times, including after signing the contract or after agreeing to the contract, that, you know, he wants to be in Milwaukee, that he likes this group. This team feels like family. You know, he believes they're building something and they're going somewhere, and he feels like he's part of that. He's appreciated the coaching of Mike Budenholzer, where, you know, he doesn't just tell you the things you want to hear. You know, he will get on you. And while he was talking about that, he's like, "Oh yeah, well, while I'm saying this, I can see the fire in his eyes when he comes at me." You know, and so, like, you know, he pushes, and Bledsoe's responded to that. I mean, as recently as this road trip, where, you know, he wasn't playing well out of the All-Star break. He didn't play well against the Chicago Bulls. He didn't play very much in that game. I guess after that game, between that game and the game in Sacramento, you know, Bud got on him and wanted more from him, and wanted more intensity and more effort, and wanted him to be the Eric Bledsoe he knew he could be. And we saw what happened. The next game against the Kings, you know, he put him on his back and he led them to a victory. And he did it on offense. He did it on defense. And so to be able to have a coach point guard relationship where you can, you know, where he can say, "Hey, you know, you need to be better," and he can push him and he can sit him and he can do, you know, different things like that and get results. I mean, that only bodes well for the future. I mean, you're not going to sign somewhere long term if, you know, if the coach doesn't really want that point guard and the point guard doesn't want that coach. And so I think that all bodes well, and I think it's a pretty good deal for the Bucks with lots of flexibility. And, you know, we'll see if Bledsoe makes that deal look like a better value than it is.
He is Matt Velasquez, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Read everything he has to say on this Milwaukee Bucks, continually the best team in the NBA, at jsonline.com. Find him on Twitter, Matt_Velasquez, VelazQuez. Thank you for joining us, Matt. We're going to chat again real soon. Bucks coming back home.
All right, can't wait.
Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. Leave us a review. Leave us a rating. You can find me, again, my name is J.R. Radcliffe, on Twitter at J.R.R.A.D.C.L.I.F.F.E. Let us know what you think of the podcast. We're getting more and more listeners every week. Fun to do that as the Bucks ramp up toward the NBA playoffs. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with you next week. Take care.